Next, storytelling producer Killeen Hansen tells us a story of her summer in the backcountry of Yosemite. It turns out it's more than just the mountains she comes to love. It's the mountain way of life among a mountain group of people.
I remember Laughing Matt scrambling over the boulders in the talus slope above camp. I remember John Corey wearing a plaid quilted skirt as he baked challah in the sunrise kitchen, and Babs dancing around the campfire in a purple leotard. I remember how Gary Finistad called every day in the mountains another day in paradise. And I remember Mookie and Thor and Ruth and Danielle. I remember Ranger Dave, or Danger Rave, and how he would tell us old Indian creation myths under the late-night banner of the Milky Way. These are the people, the characters even, the Yosemites, who danced with me around campfires, who bagged peaks before breakfast, who taught me to like whiskey, and who, more than anything else, made me fall in love with the life and the beauty of the Sierra Nevada. I spent a summer living and working with them in the backcountry of Yosemite National Park. I was jittery with excitement when I hiked into camp that first day of the summer, up the 8 miles from the road on a stair-step trail. I would be spending the season at Vogelsang High Sierra Camp. All around me, gray granite slabs peeked up through the dark soil and the underbrush. I felt like I could see the bones of the world. The trail climbed first through the forest, meandered its way through the meadow, and then climbed once more along the face of the mountain. And no matter how long I'd been away, I loved seeing the white tops of our tent cabins and hearing the ring of the dinner bell as I topped that last rise to camp. At the beginning of the season, the trail to Vogelsang was verdant and lush and oh so green, with patches of snow still surviving alongside the trail. As the weeks passed, the young grass turned gold, and the streams and creeks dried up until there were only wide trails of round stones and polished boulders to mark where the water had once flowed. If you know what you're doing, you hike just off the trail, right on the firmer edge where the grass meets the sand. The other choice is to slog through the soft trail dust, following the footsteps of hundreds of laden mule trains carrying luggage and supplies. The first time I hiked into camp, I did it in 2.5 hours, my excitement and anticipation making me move faster and faster. Later in the season, I moved more slowly, knowing that there was no hurry to get anywhere fast. The only high country clock that matters is the sun, and soon it seemed only natural to get up when it rose in the morning and go to sleep when it set. Thoreau really had something going when he wrote so famously, "I left the woods for as good a reason as I went there. Perhaps it seemed to me that I had several more lives to live, and I could not spare any time for that one." How true that was for me. For a single golden summer, Yosemite was my Walden. I went there to live one life and returned 3 months later to live another. But if I were to be really honest with myself, I would say that I went to Yosemite for the daring of it. I wanted to do something really different, something that would have never fit into the suit jacket lives that so many of my friends had chosen. I wanted to be a part of epic stories and reckless adventures, to meet and laugh with mountain men and women, and to fill my imagination with the exploits and voices of colorful characters. I wanted permission to dream big, foolhardy, impossible dreams, and to believe, for a summer at least, that they might all come true. And so I fled to the mountains, and as it turns out, to the wild wandering souls that live there. On one of my first weekends of the summer, I wandered down to Merced Lake, the next camp on the High Sierra Loop Trail. After 8 miles through the growing dusk of just me and the trail ahead, I wandered into camp. It was John Rogers' birthday party, and I could hear the cheerful rumble of voices and the happy shouting coming from the clearing on the other side of the river. As I rolled up my pant legs to ford the river, a figure stepped out of the shadows on the far bank and guided me across the most direct route. I stepped onto shore and I was gifted with an enormous smile of welcome from a perfect stranger and beckoned over to the giant bonfire crackling under the Cathedral of Redwoods. I dropped my pack, found a spot on a log between two people who scooted over to make room, and in a blink had a cold beer pressed into my hand and an arm slung over my shoulder. We swayed and sang to improvised tunes from a charmingly informal band, complete with ukulele, guitar, flute, and didgeridoo. The next morning, the crowd of partygoers slowly dispersed and started their long hikes back to their home camps. I wavered in my decision, torn equally between a desire to relax and explore Merced Lake a little further, or to make the 14-mile trek to Tuolumne Meadows and the barn dance later that evening. I was reading a dog-eared copy of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, and sitting in the sun just outside the Merced Lake kitchen. And as I was sitting there, John Corey left the kitchen with a sandwich in hand, turning to me and saying, in a tone that took the answer as a given, "Killeen, you're coming with us. Get your bags packed, we'll be heading up the hill when you're ready." I had only been in Yosemite for a few short weeks, and had barely acclimated to the elevation, much less found my place in this oddball group of mountain men and women, and here was John Corey, a legendary character in the backcountry, asking me, by name, to join him on his hike back up the mountain. Of course I would go. I startled up from my chair in the sun, stuffed my poor, beat-up book back into my pocket, donned the pack, and stood at the ready. And off we went, John playing the ukulele as we ambled alongside the river, Ruth stopping with me every time I needed to take a break, Alex billy-goating up the trail ahead of us. We would find him perched pensively on a rock or log waiting for us to catch up. Occasionally, the others would take sips out of their Nalgenes. Nalgenes, I might add, that were filled with whiskey instead of water. A note about hiking with people who live in the high country. That hike that day, up the hill, as John Corey called it, was nothing less than a 9-mile climb up some 3,000 feet. As the summer progressed and I earned my high country legs, I too would call that hike a walk up the hill. Soon I would think of nothing of setting out 5 or 8 miles for an afternoon jaunt. I learned that day too that the infamous high country shortcut meant going up and over something steep instead of taking the long way around. Shorter, perhaps, as the bird flies, but definitely no quicker. And I might add, far more painful. That night, exhausted from our day's hiking, I sat in the shadows at a picnic table outside the barn offices and watched the crowd. The stables were bedecked with twinkle lights that made the inside rafters glow with the party spirit. The bales of hay had been moved out of the way to make room for a dance floor, and indeed there were dozens of people swinging and line dancing, hopping from partner to partner with grins the size of Half Dome. I could see Ranger Dave in all his glory two-stepping with Danielle, who was dressed to kill in a polka-dotted thrift store masterpiece that reminded me of Minnie Mouse. It was a true barn dance, cowboys in polished boots and neatly tucked plaid shirts tipping their Stetsons at you as you walked by. The women were bedecked in colorful outfits from every era, and it made me smile to see the twirl of skirts as they swung on the dance floor. Fresh sunny-side eggs and toast for breakfast the next morning, and I was on my way, heading back up the trail towards home. Well, it's always we ramble. My Yosemite friends are gypsies. They'll save money from a summer season working in the park and slowly spend it over the course of the next year. Perhaps they'll go to Argentina. They might even stay on in the park for the winter, cooking dinners or waiting tables to earn a little more cash. On the weekends, they'll head for the backcountry and the open trails. They are eager to be moving and antsy when caught in one place for too long. The most interesting people I know are those who have taken the circuitous route from point A to point B, but by golly, they've seen the world in between. Those who never waver from the path, on the other hand, and who know exactly what they want, also earn my admiration. They have a certainty about themselves that guides them safely and directly. But a part of me wonders, are they perhaps, these ambitious, motivated people, missing something? Is it not possible that by taking the long way around, they might have found something that they care about more than what they currently did? Before the summer, I wouldn't have been sure of the answer. Yet after the summer, after the people I met, I learned that there is not only a beauty in always searching and moving from one place to another, from one job to another, but that there is a dignity in living a life so rich and varied.
Cause my pastures of plenty must always be free.
Green pastures. The people I met in Yosemite lived every day with that enthusiasm. It is a simple and spontaneous twirling dervish of passion for every new day. The barn dance, for example, a gathering around a bonfire with friends old and new, or a swig of whiskey on a mountain trail. These were the ties that bind in the backcountry. During those 10 weeks that I lived in the dusty wilderness, doing manual labor and showering but once or twice a week, I have never felt more consistently beautiful or confident. I was me, just me, and there was nothing to hide or be ashamed of. I'm afraid of ever living without a safety net. And a weight, I must admit, was lifted from my shoulders to know that I had a good and worthwhile job to return to when I left the mountains. Many of the people I met there didn't have a clue as to what they were going to do for more than 2 months in advance. And I find, accepting my worries about the future, that this roving lifestyle is magnetically appealing. One day, maybe I too will be able to take whatever opportunity may cross my path and have nothing to tie me down. I wish I could follow my slightest whim, whether it be foolhardy or inspired, and remain confident that all would turn out well. But I am aware that the world is not always kind to the unprepared. It is this awareness that goads me to look ahead and plan for my future. It may change, certainly, but the practice of thinking about the big picture is invaluable. I wondered about my Yosemite friends as I filled out my 401k plan for the first time and navigated the maze of job benefits and rent payments. What is their life like, unencumbered by these obligations? Do they ever worry at night that one day everything might not just work out? And do they ever miss the quiet comfort of a home to return to each night? It seems like another world from this one here, where I am writing this essay on a computer at a desk in my quiet room. And to be honest, I miss terribly the blissful glow of contentment and acceptance that I felt sitting around that fire only a few months ago. The flickering orange glow of the fire on laughing faces, the slowly emptying bottle of whiskey that got passed around and around the circle, the spontaneous rallying cries to go jump in the river, the confidence to lean back comfortably against the knees of someone I had never met, and the bubble of fierce love welling up inside of me for those independent souls who had the courage to be honest to themselves.
Killeen Hansen is a producer for the Stanford Storytelling Project and graduated from Stanford in 2008. Our final piece today is a poem by Peter Klein. It's about a special kind of wild California tree,